This episode of A Productive Conversation is sponsored by Uplift Desk. In today's work environment, it's essential to find a balance and promote well-being, and Uplift Desk is here to make that a reality. With a focus on ergonomics and innovative design, Uplift Desk offers standing desks that not only encourage healthier work habits, but also enhance your overall productivity. Each desk is built with unmatched stability and quality, ensuring that your workspace is both dynamic and durable. The beauty of Uplift Desk lies in its extensive customization options, allowing you to select from a vast array of desktops and accessories to fit your specific work needs and aesthetic preferences. Additionally, Uplift Desk is committed to customer satisfaction, offering fast shipping, free returns, and a 15-year warranty. Transform your office and your health by visiting UpliftDesk.com/timecrafting for 5% off your order. That's UpliftDesk.com/timecrafting to get 5% off your entire order. With Uplift Desk, you're not just investing in a piece of furniture, you're investing in a healthier, more productive future. Again, go to UpliftDesk.com/timecrafting to get 5% off your order today.
Hi, I'm Michael Dietrich Chastain, and I'm about to have a productive conversation with Mike Vardy.
Change is inevitable. It's also not all that simple and definitely never easy. But if you can have some kind of mnemonic or some way to help you and your team make it happen with a little less friction, that would be helpful. And when you talk about change with someone who knows a lot about change, you figure out how to make it happen with a little less pain and a little bit more pleasure. You can see the light at the end of the tunnel. Michael Dietrich Chastain is such a person. I'm glad I was able to chat with him today on this episode. He's a best-selling author, leadership coach, facilitator, and professional speaker. Michael and his team are passionate about helping organizations, leaders, and teams become experts on change management. So going beyond just doing change, but becoming experts at that, as well as communication and emotional intelligence. Michael's writing has been featured on Time Magazine, Money, Entrepreneur, and The Washington Post. And his first book, Changes, was released in 2019, and it became a bestseller in multiple categories. We have a fantastic conversation today. We talk about little cards too, which we'll get into. There's so much to get into. I'm done talking for a change. Let's have a conversation. Here's Michael Dietrich Chastain. Enjoy. Michael, thanks for joining me on the program today.
Mike, thanks for having me. It's great to be here with you.
So whenever anyone calls me Michael, I feel like I'm in trouble. Do you go by Mike or you go by Michael? But I mean, do you get the same thing where it's like, you know, for me, it's like Michael Ryan. I'm like, what? That's my mom or my mother-in-law. But Michael, it just, for me, I've become Mike. I mean, I've always been Mike. Have you always been Michael or does it depend on the situation?
It does. It depends on the people that I'm in front of and the context, I guess. But yeah, same as you. When I was growing up, if I heard Michael, it was, you know.
Uh-oh, I'm in trouble. Well, we're not going to be in trouble today. We're going to have a great conversation about your book called Changes, The Busy Professional's Guide to Reducing Stress, Accomplishing Goals, and Mastering Adaptability. And what the cover of the book. Some might be able to watch this on video. If you're not, it's a bright yellow cover, at least what I've got in front of me. I'm sure that I'm almost positive it's stuck the same, right? You still got the same kind of, but there's a tree that points downward that's barren, and then one that's like lit up with leaves. Why this cover? What was the, I want to get into that because I found that neat right out of the gate. Like what was the impetus behind putting this as the cover illustration?
Oh, thanks so much. And thanks for asking. Yeah, the cover has a number of meanings to it. But one of the basic premises of the book is that all of our aspects of our lived experiences, when harnessed well, result in our ability to manage change effectively. And when we ignore or don't support one of these core seven, which are in the book, we run into trouble. And so this blooming up top and roots underneath, it is a bit of a nod to this, you know, interconnectedness between interior and exterior. You could call it interconnectedness between past and future. And so that's what the nod is about, is the interconnectedness.
As I make my way through the book, you've got these seven things, and I'm a big fan of initialisms and acronyms, and changes is one of those things. It's actually an acronym, right? Because initialisms are just initials, but acronym makes a word. We're going to get to that in a second, but you've divided this up, and I'm going to, as with a conversation, if I was having a conversation, I don't generally go in an order, but one of the things that stood out to me right away was this idea of trusting your intuition. And the reason is it comes back to Ted Lasso. I've been watching.
I'm a Ted Lasso fan. Mike, we're off to a good start already.
So, spoiler alert, if you haven't watched all of Ted Lasso yet, I'm not going to give you the details of what happened, but there's an exchange between the owner of the Richmond AFC and Ted Lasso, who is the manager. And Ted says this line, and he says, don't think with your head, think with your gut, and on the way down, check in with your heart along the way, something along those lines. And that stuck with me because a lot of the decisions that I've made, some to the detriment of my business and some to the debt, but I'm definitely not somebody who's risk averse. I have leaned into that intuitive portion of the way that I operate. Why do you lean into this in this particular chapter? Because a lot of people, like, intuition can be a very tricky beast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. We need more Ted Lassos in our world. We I
do.
Think
we do that right now. We definitely do.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
A few Roy Kents wouldn't be a bad idea either, to be honest.
That's right. That's right. Well, there's a lot of complexity to intuition, but I think that one of the, and you spoke to this just a second ago, one of the risks that we have when we don't get good at following our intuition is that we follow something else and it leads us down a path that we don't want, right? And just like you, Mike, I've had plenty of those failures, as I'm sure all the listeners have as well, when we truly know what the directions we should take, but we ignore it. And part of it is because we maybe aren't practiced in following our intuition, or fear just takes hold of us. And maybe we're not practiced in taking risks or being courageous. And so I think more times than not, our intuition can lead us toward benefit and lead us away from risk, which is always there in decision making. And so
I trusted my intuition going down that path with that question. And now I'm going to go back to where most people would start when they're talking about a book. And I teased the acronym CHANGES. So
yeah,
what does CHANGES stand for? Like what, and then we're going to dive into each of those elements to a degree, but I want to get a sense of why these matter to, and what compelled you to say, this is what I need to put into not just a book, but also some companion cards that I also happen to have here in my hands.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd love to give a little background if I could to answer this question.
Absolutely.
Because it'll help. Yeah, it'll help kind of fill in some gaps. And so this question comes up all the time. And one of the things that I always try and, lightheartedly mention is that, I'm not some guy that, decided, well, what are some neat characteristics of our lived experience? And what's a cool acronym that we could put together and just kind of throwing wall at the paint, or sorry, paint at the wall.
No,
right?
No. There's podcasts out there. I listen to a podcast by Conrad Thompson. He always says a fresh paint a coat. So that's fine. throw some wall at the paint. Yep.
Exactly. So that is not the process. The process was backing up, 16, 17 years ago when I got out of college, I was originally on a track for what's called industrial organizational psychology, which is the process of going into an organization and determining what are the human elements here that are impacting performance, impacting success of the business, the bottom line, et cetera. And so that was my vision for the future, is I was going to become one of these psychologists. And so I got a corporate job out of school, was very interesting, learned a ton about leadership, about employee management, about navigating the employee job placement, all sorts of things. And it triggered this interest in wanting to take a deeper dive. And so I went back and instead of getting a degree in IO, got a degree in counseling and became eventually, over the course of years, became a licensed psychotherapist. and lived in the mental health world for a number of years, leading teams of therapists, doing private practice, working in the health system, the jail system, the community, still had this interest in corporate work. And so about 10 years ago, made a shift back and have been in the corporate world since, doing leadership development, team performance, training, and coaching, which is what we do now. And I say all that, Mike, to give you some background in that I've seen human change exist in all sorts of lenses, from someone that's suffering from severe and persistent mental health disorder, from, you know, schizophrenia or anxiety or depression, to the leader that wants to create a change in his team, to the team member that wants to improve their ability to communicate or resolve conflict, you know, and everything in between. So after working with thousands of clients over the years, came to this question of what are the predictors of successful change making? And what are these elements of our lived experience that when harnessed will absolutely lead us to success, and when ignored will absolutely lead us to some kind of detriment. Mm-hmm. And so what, if you can imagine like a big spreadsheet, if I was noodling on this question, you know, what are these predictors of change for a while, for probably 18 months. And eventually came to these seven, and this spreadsheet had all these words on it. And I thought, wouldn't it be cool if there was an acronym for these seven? And that is how the acronym CHANGES came about. It was first looking at what are these seven elements of our lived experience, and then coincidentally landing on the name. And so that's a very long answer to your question, and I'm happy to reveal what the seven are if you'd like.
Well, let's dive into that, because I think that when people are, the way that you describe it in the book, you've divided it up in such a way that each of these letters gets a little bit of a spotlight. And then what we'll do is we'll go through a couple of them in a bit more detail, because as I was going through the books and you've got some notes, like you talk about the best way to improve productivity. I can't wait to hear that. We're going to get to that in a little bit, but what are the letters stand for?
Sure. So it's, and I'll give just a touch on what they mean. Absolutely. So cognition is about our mentality. What do we tend to think about? What's our thought processes? Are we abundance focused? Are we deficit focused? So that's C. H is heart. So that's our emotional self. Are we working through our emotional baggage? Are we ignoring it? How is that showing up in our lives? A is action, our habits, routines, daily, monthly, weekly, yearly. I know that habits is something you talk about a lot, Mike. That's in there. N is nourishment, which is all about our physical experience. And so things like how we eat, how we exercise or don't, and how we sleep. And that's pretty obvious. A lot of connectivity between our physical experience and how we perform. Mm-hmm. Guts is G. That is our level of courage to act on what's congruent with us. And we talked a little bit about that with following our intuition. E is environment, the people, places, and things that we are surrounded by and how they influence us. And there's a unique thing about environment right now. I was just talking to somebody about this recently. We're in this unusual time period right now with this, you know, continued digital emergence. So a lot of our environments right now are digital. Mm-hmm. So that's uniqueness. And then S is spirit, which is all about our belief systems, both the big ones like, you know, where did I come from? Where am I going? What am I here to do as a human being? And the small ones, I put small in quotes, like things like how much money might I make? What am I capable of in work? You know, where are my strengths? Where are my weaknesses? Those kinds of beliefs.
This episode of A Productive Conversation is sponsored by Shopify. Dreaming of starting your own business or looking to take your current one to the next level? Shopify is here to make that dream a reality. As the leading e-commerce platform, Shopify empowers you to start, grow, and manage your business with ease. From setting up your online store to scaling globally, Shopify provides all the tools you need to succeed in the marketplace. Customize your storefront, manage your inventory, and connect with your customers all in one place. With direct-to-consumer pricing, same-day shipping, and a global community of entrepreneurs, Shopify supports your journey at every step. Are you ready to transform your business idea into a success story? Visit shopify.com/timecrafting to start your free trial and embark on your entrepreneurial journey with Shopify. That's shopify.com/timecrafting to start your free trial. Do it today. This episode of A Productive Conversation is sponsored by 1Password. Imagine a world where forgetting passwords is no longer a hassle and your digital security is uncompromised. 1Password offers a robust, intuitive solution to manage all your passwords with just one master password, safeguarding your information across every device. This isn't just any password manager. It's a comprehensive security tool that encrypts your data, ensuring only you have access. With 1Password, you can generate strong, unique passwords for each of your accounts, store sensitive information securely, and even share important logins with family or colleagues safely. Recognized by Wirecutter as the top pick for password managers, 1Password is the preferred choice for enhancing your online security without the complexity. Enhance your digital security by visiting 1Password.com. And we have a special offer for listeners of A Productive Conversation. Right now, listeners of A Productive Conversation get a free 2-week trial at 1Password.com/productive convo. That's 2 free weeks at 1Password.com/productive convo. 1Password.com/productive convo. Check out what 1Password can do for you, your business, and even your family today. This episode of A Productive Conversation is sponsored by Prolon. If you've ever considered fasting for its health benefits but can't face the idea of days without food, Prolon offers a novel solution. It's a nutrition program that simulates the effects of fasting while allowing you to eat. Developed by scientists at the USC Longevity Institute, Prolon supports weight management, enhances physical performance, and bolsters gut health through a meticulously crafted 5-day meal program. This isn't just another diet. It's a lifestyle change backed by Nobel Prize-winning research, designed to trigger cellular rejuvenation and promote overall well-being. I can't wait to put it through the paces. The meals, ranging from savory soups to nutritious snacks, are all designed to ensure your body achieves a fasting state with the energy you need to maintain your daily routine. Prolon is convenient, providing everything in a single box delivered to your doorstep. I am anxiously awaiting mine. I encourage you to check out Prolon as well. If you're ready to see how Prolon can change the way you think about fasting and nutrition, then right now, Prolon is offering A Productive Conversation listeners 10% off their 5-day nutrition program. Go to prolonlife.com/timecrafting. That's prolonlife.com/timecrafting for this special offer. Head over to prolonlife.com/timecrafting to get started today.
So as someone listens to this right now, maybe you're listening to this right now going, that seems like so many to focus on. Like how do I approach this in a way that doesn't overload me, overwhelm me, put me in a position? Like when they're thinking about making, like enacting what you've talked about in this book, taking action, how do you recommend someone does this in a way that is sensible, that makes sense, that's a reasoned approach, as opposed to, because I have to say that people that listen to this show, people that I come across, a lot of the clients I work with, they're very much like, I want to get it all. I want it all to happen now. Like they're very driven, but change is in my experience, and I'd love to, you know, expand upon this with you, is not something that is instantaneous, and if you try to do too much of it all at once, the whole house of cards can come toppling down. So someone who's looking at this and they're going to go through the book, they're like, okay, well, hold on, where do I start? How do I do this in a way that all of them kind of get the attention that they deserve in the cadence that they need to, so that I don't fall apart in the process or become too overwhelmed in the process?
Yeah, great question. That question comes up all the time. And I'll say a couple things to it. We work with a lot of high performers as well, high performing leaders that expect a lot of themselves and a lot of those that they lead. And so this is a common question of, I want it all and I want it all right now. And so, you know, the first thing I would encourage folks to think about is that, just like you said, getting better at both responding to change as well as creating it is a lifelong process, right? It's the one thing we can count on, right? Like death and taxes and things changing. Like that's always going to be happening. And so the torch that I would say I carry is that being better at change is the most important skill set that we can create as human beings, because it's ever present and it applies to everything always. So that's the encouragement I would give, is that, you know, it's a process and it will take time. But also to take the pressure off, one of the things that we've seen after using this tool for the last many years is that there are typically two or three of these seven that people have really a ton of success in. And maybe there's two or three that really need a lot of attention. So it's very unlikely that someone would look at this and think, oh my gosh, I have to work on all seven of these because all seven of these need severe attention. It's more likely that, you know, there's two or three that people know, gosh, I'm really ignoring this and it's showing up in my relationships. It's showing up in my productivity, showing up in my work. So that's where I should put my attention first.
I want to talk about meditation. It's something that literally today I did as we're recording this, I did before I started my day. It's one of the habits that I have done in fits and starts over the years. I don't think it's because I want to, quote, get it done or win it or finish it, because, you know, we all know that meditation is a practice for a reason. It's not like something that you can just, I want it meditation. I don't have to do this anymore. It's not that. It's always been that old story of, you know, well, I don't have time to meditate. And then of course someone says, well, if you don't have time to meditate, you definitely need to meditate. Like it's that paradox, right? So yeah,
the old thing.
Yeah. So for, I want to lean into this a little bit because I know that there's power there, and I'd like you to talk about your meditation journey and how you got to there, how you were able to kind of, because I've talked to meditation experts and I mean, that journey isn't necessarily as, I wouldn't say compelling, but it's not as surprising because it's what they've leaned into, but you've got like a lot of these different areas that fill different cups and fill different buckets. Mm-hmm. Yet I'm certain meditation helps fill all of them to a degree as well, right? You know what I mean? Like that there's elements of it. Yeah. So I'd love to hear your journey, your thoughts, and how did you manage to keep it something that has been sustainable for you?
Yeah, so I'm a big believer in the idea of experimentation. And this shows up in every day in the work that I do with leaders and teams. And experimentation meaning that whenever we're going to try on a new habit, and in this case, we're talking about meditation, the opportunity is to take the pressure off and know that there are many options. Some of them may or may not fit, and that we can commit to, you know, biting the elephant, you know, one or chewing the elephant one bite at a time. Right. That's how we eat an elephant. Right.
Yep.
And so I really, I'm talking about meditation a lot with clients because it comes up and we know the results that it brings. And it's, you know, like I said, we work with a lot of high performers, and focusing on mindfulness practices and meditation is a good fit, you know, I would say, for a high performer. And so that's the first thing I would say is experiment. There's all sorts of meditation. There's yoga, there's Tai Chi, there's Vipassana, there's, you know, seated meditation, there's walking meditation. I was just on a call today with a client who had experimented with a walking meditation every day for the last 2 weeks. And the call was all about, or not all about, but we spent some time talking about, you know, what did you learn about yourself? What did you learn about your environment? You know, what did you learn about where your mind rests? You know, what did you learn about, you know, just the whole situation? How might this apply to your work? So I would encourage people to do some experimenting around you could call it like a meditation buffet. Like choose a handful, do each for 2 weeks and see what you like, and then go from there. And in answer to your question about my journey, a lot of the last 15, 17 years or so have been, my entry to meditation in the last 15 to 17 years has been through Eastern martial arts. And so my practice is Tai Chi or Qigong is a regular daily meditation. And then sometimes I'll do seated or walking, but it's usually more active. And again, that's through experimenting and knowing what works for me and what I can hold consistency with.
So it's interesting. You talk about Tai Chi. I've been thinking about that myself. And there is this archetype of the person you see practicing in the park that's doing Tai Chi.
Yeah.
It's like the older, elderly person or something along those lines. And sure. I know that that's something I've actually looked into it. There's a local group here that does it, and it's come across my mind on several occasions. Of course, I capture it and get it out of my head. But there's something that has prevented me from doing it. And you go into this book, you talk about fear. And yeah, I'm a Green Lantern fan. Anyone who's listened to the podcast for a while knows that willpower is the thing that I kind of, I toot that horn. But fear to me is, and I was listening to Ryan Holiday talk about his new book as of this recording, Courage is Calling with Rich Roll. And talking about like fear is inevitable. It's, you know, like it's ever present. It's omnipresent. But like so many other things, it is so subtle at times.
Yeah.
How I want to dig a bit into the subtleties of fear. Like you talk about letting it go. But sometimes I think it shows up in a way that you're not even aware it's there until it's like quicksand. You're like, oh crap, I'm stuck in it now. And if I struggle too much, I'm going to sink deeper. So let's not talk about the fear that is so apparent, like the fear of like, oh, I don't want to quit my job and start something new. Or I don't want to ask my boss for more boundaries. Like, I don't want to tell my boss, hey, you can't, you know, like this is my work hours and this. And there's a fear around that. We'll get to boundaries in a little bit here. But sure. The subtle fear, the ones that sneak up on you. And then scare the crap out of you but in a way that's like in a sinister fashion. And I mean, I'm trying to paint a picture here. How do you try to keep those, maybe not at bay, but how do you let go of those when you may not know that they're there until it's, well, quote, you know, so far into it that it's tough to let go.
Yeah. Yeah. Great. So, you know, we will always, I think, as human beings, be faced with those scenarios where, oh gosh, I didn't realize this scared me, right? No matter how practiced we are at being courageous. And I do believe that fear translates. Meaning, what I mean by that is that if we get good at addressing fear in a regular context, and I can talk about how to do that in a minute, then when those things emerge, when those new fears emerge, the ones that is, you know, the quicksand, the things we didn't expect, our ability to address fear in the other conditions that we've practiced will show up in the form of courage. So even though we can always count on the fact that there's going to be things that are going to be scary, getting better at addressing fear on a regular basis will translate. And I think that, you know, the way to do that is to find the opportunity to practice with fear in conditions that are maybe, you know, maybe less risk, but some risk, right? So maybe it's, you know, it could be as simple as practicing some discipline that really is uncomfortable, right? So maybe it's an exercise discipline or a yoga or a running or whatever it is, something that's really uncomfortable. It could be, you know, if you're an introvert, maybe it's having a certain amount of conversations in public over the course of a week, right? If you've got a really angry boss, maybe it's challenging yourself to have that difficult conversation with your boss that you've been putting off, right? So for everybody, it's going to be different, but there's always opportunities to move toward fear. And then the advantage being that when the quicksand emerges, like you mentioned, Mike, we'll be better equipped to deal with it.
Boundaries. I want to lean into that a little bit because people struggle with those. They struggle with establishing them. And one of the things I've said is if you can set boundaries, that's great. But if you can't respect them, you can't expect anybody else to. So in the context of what you're talking about in the book, and boundaries, not just work-life boundaries, because I think that's a tricky beast in and of itself. I think that's something worth it. But just boundary, making sure that you declare. Maybe not overtly. Again, maybe it's as subtle as that fear I was talking about. But putting those boundaries in place so that they can be respected by others and by you, but not in again, we're going back to that overwhelm phrase, but not in a way that's going to be overwhelming to you where it becomes respecting and following the boundaries becomes the very thing that is problematic for you because you've either set too many or you've made them unrealistic or you've set them around the wrong person. And so what most people I would imagine do in this situation, I've seen this myself, is that they don't set any because putting a line in the sand anywhere somebody's going to be pissed off. Something's going to not go right. So let's dive into that a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. I could talk about this all day. You know, boundaries is something that we see show up in leadership training and coaching all the time. It's one of these core skill sets that I think really good leaders are able to institute and have a really strong harnessing of boundaries, and those that aren't so great at leadership really struggle with. And, you know, to your point, like, it can get overwhelming if we're super overt about it, but we don't have to be in order to get practiced at boundary setting. So, you know, one of the pillars in the book is environment, which is the people, places, and things that we are surrounded by and that we choose to surround ourselves with. So boundary could be as simple as, I'm going to decide that I'm not going to go to these particular places online anymore because I know that they cause me stress or anxiety or tension.
Right.
Right. Or it might be that, you know, simple as, I'm going to turn my phone off at 9 o'clock instead of 10 o'clock.
Yeah, so you're changing time. Maybe. You're changing time. You're not being as absolute about it. You're going, I won't do this until this time or outside of this time.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And the same thing with challenging fear and giving ourselves little experiments toward leaning into fear. The same thing is with boundaries. We can experiment with them and do a little bit along the way. And that skill set, that muscle that we're building, will eventually translate into the big boundaries of maybe, gosh, I know we've had this friendship for 10 years, but I think we need to, you know, spend less time together. I think those are the boundaries that you're talking about that are super overt, right? The really hard conversations.
Yeah.
More difficult.
I got these cards, changes cards, and they are companions to the book, but they don't have to be though. From when I was going through them, they don't, I mean, the book definitely supports it and vice versa. So if someone is going to pick up these cards and they're going through them, how do they work? Because I went through them. I'm like, they're versatile. Like they're adaptable, which I guess stands to reason considering that the book is all about, there's an element of mastering adaptability. So first off, how do they work? And why did you put these cards into play? Because I mean, the book might've just been enough, but you've taken it to like an interactive level with these things.
Yeah. And oddly enough, we use these cards all the time and never even mention the book. So they absolutely stand alone. So the idea is that they can be used three ways, which I can talk about. There's seven pillars of our lived experience, which we talked about. Mm-hmm. Within each of these seven, there's seven questions. So 49 questions in this card deck. And the idea is you can use it by yourself. You can use it in one-on-one conversations. Like if, you know, in the reports we hear, people are using them at the dinner table with their spouse, and they're using them in performance evaluations with their teams. And so very, very adaptable. And then lastly, the scenario we see them used the most in is in group conversation. And so if you have a team and you're wanting to, you know, build relationship, build understanding and empathy with one another, they're used in that context. And so in answer to your question about how to go about it, if you'd like, Mike, I know I'm about to put you on the spot, but would you like to do a little experiment with each other now?
Let's do one. Okay.
All right.
So
I've got a deck in front of me here.
Okay. Let you run it, and
This will allow for a little surprise.
Yeah. Right? Let's do that. Okay.
So you've got these seven categories, right? Mm-hmm. These seven pillars. And when you think about them in your own life, like, which is the one that, like, you know, strikes your interest without thinking about it too much?
Oh, boy.
Which is the one that you think, gosh, that one really I need to know more about?
I would probably say S, the spiritual part.
The spirit. Okay.
Yeah, cool. The spirit.
Cool, cool. So I'm going to randomly choose a spirit card.
Okay.
Right? I just grabbed it. I don't know what this question is yet. Okay. So here's the question. It's a good one. It says, how would your best friend describe your belief system? And now you don't have to go into like religious beliefs if you don't want to, or although you could.
Yeah.
But you could take that in any direction you'd like.
Oh boy. I think that my best friend would say that my belief system is centered around be a good person, do good things, like Mike believes that if you're a good person and you do good things, then good things will happen to you and to those around you.
I love it. I love it. So
very Ted Lasso, so probably to a degree. Maybe that's why I'm here to. And the reason I bring that up, just real quick, a sidebar,
is
a lot of people don't understand the kind of work that I do, but I think that they understand how it impacts, because I work with time and the flow of, like, that's something I'm thinking about. I realize that there's so much that we have. So much going on here in this present world that we're in, whether you believe in an afterlife or whatever, that my belief is if you do good things here and you treat people well, then good things will happen to them and to you. You don't need to worry about what happens after this life is over. I think that's what I'm getting at.
I love it. I love it. So if we were to continue down this path, which I know we don't want to spend all the time there, but if we were to continue down this path, I could ask you a bunch of follow-up questions, right?
Go ahead. Fire away.
Yeah. You know, things like, just to give folks some examples, things like, you know, how did you learn about what it means to be a good person? And when you think about role models in your life that, you know, that are also following that same value system, you know, who comes to mind? Or I could, you know, ask the question of what is it about that category and that question that is relevant to your life right now? And as you're probably seeing, and as those are listening are seeing, these series of questions just allow for greater connectivity. Like, I feel like I know you a lot more now, Mike, than I did 10 minutes ago, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm sure other people feel more connected to you now as well because of that vulnerability that you just shared. And so that's just one of a handful of activities, you know, that can be done in a one-on-one scenario.
Well, and I also like the fact you do them introspectively as well. So they can be done in a solo environment too. So if you want to do them on your own, or you want to, these might become, we're having an all hands deck meeting tomorrow. I might bring some of these with me when we have our team meeting tomorrow. We have a team meeting tomorrow. We're doing some sense making, some planning for the next 6 months. So by the time this airs, that will already be 3 months into that. So the evolution of what, maybe we'll be able to do like a little bit of an aftermath and saying, hey, here's what happened. So I might be able to, you know, pin this at the end of the episode. So
there's an activity in the deck. Mm-hmm. I just want to point your attention to this so you can use it with your team.
Sure.
It's called the Change Connector.
Okay.
And if it's pretty self-explanatory, but how many people are on your team?
We're only going to have 3 people there.
Okay, great. So this activity is actually for a group of 3, so that's perfect. And so the Change Connector, if you want to make a note about that, try that activity out with your team, and I would love to hear how it goes. My guess is it'll be really...
I put it on the top of the deck. By the way, these cards are circular. Why?
Oh, well, the kind of the same nod to the fact that of this interconnectedness, right? That all of these 7, and I was just talking to a group about this last week, they influence one another, right? So they don't live by themselves. Mm-hmm. They don't live in silos. They're all connected and are always influencing one another. So that's the reason for the circle.
Last question before we wrap up. I normally have a question that I ask that is fairly rote or templated for everybody, but because we didn't get to this question yet, I get to ask it now. What is the best way to be productive? What is the best? You mentioned this in the book as a productivity and time management strategist, some would say expert. You tell me what the best way to be productive is.
Yeah. Well, I will answer this, and I'd love to hear, because you are the expert here. I'd love to hear what you think about this. So we run into this challenge all the time, every day. I run into it, of course, in my own life. And then productivity is always a question we're answering and talking about with the leaders we work with. And what I find every day, Mike, is that what gets in the way of our productivity is these same 7 pillars of our lived experience. And when we ignore the ones that we're ignoring, that shows up in our efficiency and our productivity. So again, it absolutely benefits us to look at, okay, which of these 7 do I have strengths in, and which of these are, you know, maybe I'm ignoring or not spending enough time on. And I would guarantee I'll plant the flag and say that it will show up in how much we're performing and our levels of productivity. So let me ask you, does that resonate with you as a productivity expert?
It does at the high level, for sure.
I think
that just to kind of couch that response to a degree is that some people need the baby steps initially, and the book gives you that, which I think is great. So if you want to follow that idea, which I do agree with, I mean, I can tell you right now before we hit record, later today, I'm going back to the gym, our rec center, to sign up for personal training, because I know that the nourishment part of myself is not being taken care of nearly as well as it should be. And I know it's affecting my productivity. So I think definitely at a high level, the higher level. And the thing is that with what you go through in the book, which again is called Changes, The Busy Professional's Guide to Reducing Stress, Accomplishing Goals, and Mastering Adaptability, is that if you go through the book, you're going to find ways to get to that high level in a way that doesn't feel daunting or overwhelming, because you talk about the pace of change and all that stuff in here as well. So there's a pacing and a cadence that you can follow, but the resources right here. Plus you've got the cards too, so you can pick up the cards. So Michael, this has been a fantastic conversation. I want to thank you for taking the time. Where can people pick up the book, keep up with your work, get the cards, all that fun stuff?
Sure. Yeah. The cards in the book are available on Amazon. So feel free to go there. The book's in all the formats. I will say, if people want to take a deeper dive, if they go to arcintegrated.com, it's arcintegrated.com/free. There's a bunch of resources there that people can check out, including a little assessment tool that helps you walk through the seven pillars. And I will say, in addition to that, we've got an upcoming interactive journal that has a lot of expanded experiments and activities that come from the same seven pillars, but it'll be coming out next year at some point. So they can learn more about that. Same address, arcintegrated.com/free.
And if you've been listening to this podcast for a while, you know how much I'm a fan of journaling. So check out that as well. Michael.
I will be sending you a free journal.
Excellent. Excellent. Michael, yeah. I want to thank you today for having a productive conversation with me.
Thank you, Mike. It's been a pleasure.
Change doesn't have to be that challenging. In fact, since we know it's coming anyway, we can adapt and deal with it in a really adept manner. Thanks to Michael for joining me on the show. If you want to learn more about his work, you can scroll through the show notes in the podcast app you're using right now, or you can head to productivityist.com/podcast410 for any related conversations, blog posts, and all things to do with this conversation. If you don't want to miss a single episode of What's to Come, then I encourage you to stay on that podcast app you're using right now and hit the subscribe button. That way you can make sure that you can go through the archives far easier without having to change gears and figure out, hey, how can I listen to Mike talking with David Allen or Patrick Roan or Gretchen Rubin or Keith Ferrazzi, like, how can I do that? Well, it's easy. Just subscribe, and then you can scroll through the archives, 400 plus episodes, and you've got what you need. Also, when you subscribe, you'll make sure that you won't miss a single episode of What's to Come. And next episode, we've got another great conversation. This time around, we're actually bringing an episode from the vault into play. We've started to do this once a month during the prime time months of the year. And Justin Jackson, my good friend Justin Jackson, founder of Transistor, Meeps, Mega Maker, he is joining us on the program. You don't want to miss that conversation. It's a great one. That's why we're bringing it back out of the vault just for you. One more thing before I let you go. Sponsors are important to this podcast. They help us put this podcast together. So if you want to support the show beyond subscribing to the podcast, head to our sponsors page and check out the sponsors, not just of this episode, the ones you heard today, but also sponsors that have been part of the show for quite a while. Again, go to productivityist.com/podcast sponsors to check those out. And when you do it from there, they'll know I sent you. That's it for today. Thanks so much for joining me. I'm Mike Vardy, the host of A Productive Conversation, reminding you to stop doing productive and start being productive. See you later.